in ordinary times, this law would have no problem to be passed. He said, well, obviously, these aren't ordinary times. What does he mean by that? Ordinary times? Did you simply think people were just going to bow down and not have anything to say in our society today? That's ignorant at best. Ignorant at best. I'm not saying I agree with what a lot of people are saying about homosexuality and that especially this law, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, but I believe the law and the public discourse on Christianity and its position on this are two very different things. And we're going to differentiate those on the program today. But what is ordinary times? Are ordinary times 50 years ago? Because if any legislator is stuck 50 years ago, then they probably shouldn't be a legislator. And that's just my opinion. I believe that that's probably common sense. You can't govern with that idea. So there's a lot of surprise that we've seen from both governors on the reaction and the legislatures. The governors are not alone on this. They say their legislatures are with them and they will have new versions of these laws, both of them, the Indiana and Arkansas law. Indiana said by the end of this week, we do not have a timeline for the Arkansas law. But there's this postmodern view that's what it is, where no one wants to hear. No one wants to get angry, which I understand. I understand that no one wants to get angry because they don't want useless discourse. They don't want something that's not going to get anything done. But at the same time, where they say that, listen, you believe what you want to believe, and I believe what I want to believe, that postmodern idea of thought, the second someone says something that is contrary to what they believe, they don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear it. And when you actually come and state what you have to say, when you actually say it with some conviction, well, then you're just not tolerant of other people's views. No, I believe this, and I believe it strongly. And they say in one breath that what you believe is fine, you could believe what you want to believe, that's fine. I believe what I want to believe, and that's fine too. They say that in one breath, but then when they say they want to have public discourse, because apparently just aimless discussion in the postmodern view that accomplishes nothing, that just simply informs everyone of their different viewpoints on various topics ad nauseum, apparently that is scholarly thought. I'm sorry, I thought scholarly thought actually got things done, not just talked, because I've been in one too many conversations where in the spirit of you believe what you believe and I believe what I believe and that's that, no one's going to change anyone's minds, we're just going to let everyone know what we all believe, I've been in too many pointless conversations. Because why else do we tell people what we believe? And you know what the lie is about that? The lie is that what you believe doesn't affect me. And no one wants to hear that they have a responsibility for their actions. No one wants to hear that. I believe it's satanic. I really do. I believe it is a satanic influence that they're not even aware of. And there are tons of hosts, radio show hosts like me, going across the country and saying that, listen, we don't want to have anyone talking about Bible or Bible thumping. We just want to know, okay, what do Christians believe? Or what did Jesus specifically say about homosexuality? And the second that you start doing what they consider Bible thumping, whatever that is, because for everyone in a postmodern society, it's different. Well, I can't talk with you. We're going to move on to the next caller because I can't have someone criticize what I believe. Then why are you saying what you believe? The minute you say something that you believe, someone will criticize it. Could be a neo-Nazi. I believe in freedom. A neo-Nazi doesn't believe in freedom. Or maybe their own idea of freedom. But we're going to go ahead and play some clips for you. We're approaching the break, but what did Jesus actually say? He did not say anything about homosexuality directly. No, he did not, and that's true. And as Christians, we need to acknowledge that, not dance around it. He didn't say that, anything specifically about homosexuality. But what he did say, and this is something he did say, that's going to be our scripture of the day, and I'll show you why that is so important and what that means. It's pretty self-evident when you look at what Jesus was doing. And I'm not talking about jumping through a bunch of logical hoops here and going, oh, well, you know, we're just going to have to, you know, we're going to have to do some serious Bible study in order to understand this. No, not really. It's fairly self-evident. So we're going to get into that this morning, and we're going to get into, among other things, again, accelerating your business at 7:30, and then we're going to get into some different political issues of the day. But you're on It's a New Day, 1180 WFYL. Good morning. We'll be back in just a moment, working for your liberty. What did Jesus actually say? He didn't say anything directly about homosexuality, and this is the big talk right now, and it's funny to me that people don't care about what the rest of the Bible says, but they care only about what Jesus said. Listen, I don't want to hear what the Old Testament says. I don't want to hear about what the New Testament says, all right? I just want to hear what Jesus said, because, you know, everyone's just normal people, and Jesus was the only one, I guess, who claimed that he was the Messiah, the Son of God, but it's amazing to me that there is still a cultural fascination with the idea of Jesus. And that's a good thing. That's a really good thing. Because people are asking questions. And you know what? As Christians, we need to be able to answer them and answer them correctly. Because Paul said we need to be able to have a defense for our faith. Well, here it is on the specific issue of homosexuality. What did Jesus say? Here's our scripture of the day today. And if you're listening and you believe you're maybe even practicing a practicing homosexual, please listen. Please hear me out here. Okay? Maybe even a Christian, you consider, you know, well, I believe in Jesus, and there's nothing wrong with homosexuality as far as the scripture goes. Well, let me tell you what Jesus said, okay, if that is an issue for you. I'm going and I'm looking at Matthew 5, okay? And we are going to go down to verse 17, Matthew 5, 17. This is the New Living Translation, okay? Don't misunderstand why I have come. I did not come to abolish the law of Moses. Now, yesterday on this program, we read part of that law of Moses, Leviticus 18:22, the famous scripture that says that homosexuality is, in the King James Version, an abomination. We looked at the word to'ova and what that word really means, how it's, you could say maybe it's not abomination, but it clearly means something that's reprehensible or detestable, because it's used to describe child sacrifice. It's used to describe sin that God is not pleased with in multiple areas in Leviticus. So when it says the law of Moses, that's what it's talking about. Jesus was in a Jewish culture. He was Jewish. So when he says the law of Moses, those are their holy writings, the Old Testament, the Torah. That's the Old Testament. Okay? So as far as, no, Jesus did not say anything directly about homosexuality, but this is what he did say. Now let's read it again. This is Matthew 5:17. Don't misunderstand why I have come. I did not come to abolish the law of Moses or the writings of the prophets. No, I came to accomplish their purpose. I'll say it again. No, I came to accomplish their purpose. And then he clarifies even more for maybe even a discussion that we are having today as far as, well, maybe homosexuality is permissible in Scripture. He clarifies it even more in verse 18. I tell you the truth, until heaven and earth disappear, not even the smallest detail of God's law will disappear until its purpose is achieved. Verse 19. So if you ignore the least commandment and teach others to do the same, you will be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But anyone who obeys God's laws and teaches them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. Now, does that give you license right there to sin? No, it doesn't. Because he says right after that in verse 20, but I warn you, unless your righteousness is better than the righteousness of the teachers of the religious law and the Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. It's interesting. He kind of puts us in a conundrum there. Now, this is where we're getting into Bible study, right? I'll admit it. At this point, from here on out, it is a little bit of Bible study, okay? But he kind of puts us into a little vice where, all right, we can't, if we ignore the least commandment, we'll be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. Teach others to do the same. If we obey God's laws, we'll be called great in the kingdom of heaven. But unless our righteousness is better than the teachers of the law, then we'll never enter the kingdom of heaven. All right, so what are we supposed to do, Jesus? What are we supposed to do, Jesus? And that's why he came to die. Bible lesson over as far as study. Now, but that's what Jesus says. Don't misunderstand why I have come. I did not come to abolish the law of Moses or the writings of the prophets. No, I came to accomplish their purpose. I tell you the truth. Until heaven and earth disappear, not even the smallest detail of God's law will disappear until its purpose is achieved. And the law of Moses, God's law, that's the Old Testament. That's Leviticus 18:22. Jesus did not say anything about homosexuality directly, but he did say this. You can't say, and if you're listening and you're in this situation, my heart goes out to you. It's you can't get around it. There is a way. There is a better way. Jesus talked about that way. So all the public discourse going on about homosexuality, bringing up the question, well, Jesus didn't say anything about homosexuality. That's true, not directly. But he said this. And the law of Moses, and that's what people think, that they could pick and choose different parts of the Bible, especially now that this is so wide open in the area of public thinking because of these issues in Indiana and Arkansas. Now that this is blown wide open, people think they could just pick and choose different parts of the Bible. Jesus, from his own words, doesn't allow you to do that. He doesn't allow you to pick and choose parts of the Bible. He says, I came to fulfill all the laws of Moses. That's the Old Testament. That's what he was referring to. He's Jewish. He's talking to a Jewish people. The laws of Moses mean one thing, and that's the Old Testament, the Torah. You can't get around that. So to put any kind of discussion on that to rest, we've got some sound bites as far as Governor Asa Hutchinson and Governor Mike Pence and how they're basically backpedaling. We're going to find out who has a backbone real quick, and who's really doing this to simply govern, and who's really doing this as something they really believe in. Because again, this is the intersection of church and the state right now. We'll play those sound bites. Governor Asa Hutchinson, and this is one we'll play for you, where his own son took out a petition against him. And, you know, it makes perfect sense to me because he's part of my generation. And as a whole, a lot of people in my generation believe that there's nothing wrong with homosexuals if they want to practice the way that they want to practice. I don't believe that. I believe that there is something wrong with homosexuality and that the Bible tells us that. But my generation as a whole, I remember in school, I want to say maybe 7 or 8 times out of 10, even if they didn't believe in it or practice it themselves, they really had this kind of idea that if you want to do it, it's fine. It's not really my issue. So, but we're going to head to a break. We've got Accelerating Your Business coming up next on It's a New Day, 1180 WFYL. You can call in at 610-539-TALK, 610-539-TALK, or abroad at 1-877-667-1180. That's 1-877-667-1180. And we'll continue this conversation. We'll have those cuts of Governor Asa Hutchinson and Governor Mike Pence. And we'll also get into Senator Menendez and his recent indictment. And some facts about that, which you should know, is President Obama going after those who oppose him? Because this isn't the only area that we've seen this in. We've got some facts and figures we want to bring to your attention on It's a New Day, 1180 WFYL, working for your liberty. WFYL, working for your liberty. Call in at 610-539-TALK. That's 610-539-TALK. What do you think about this whole issue? What do you think about what Jesus said about homosexuality? You can call in abroad at 1-877-667-1180. That's 1-877-667-1180. And we've got Al Locke in studio telling us about some upcoming program changes here on the Freedom Station, namely to our nighttime lineup. Al, how you doing this morning?
Just fine, Michael. Good to be on, and hello, listeners. We're sad to announce that Roger Hedgecock has retired, and he's no longer on our station. We're really going to miss him. He was an intellectual giant in many ways. He was analyzed things and told us what was going on behind the scenes, and gave us his valued judgment. He seemed to have almost a council or an advisory group that really allowed him to do more than just speak for himself. So I really appreciate him, particularly in the last few weeks of his. He seemed to become more and more intellectual and more astute in his judgment. So we really will miss Roger. The network that supplied him supplied a stand-in, and we tried that, hoping that, and Roger even said that he'd be standing in and helping out the new host during the last hour of the program. But after being on for two days there, we decided, and even though the gentleman had a mother that was a minister and everything, that some of the things he said was just not up to the WFYL moral standard. So he's off, and we have extended Phil's program, normally 3 to 6. Now it's 3 to 7, and we've been playing some of our programs from right here, some of the outstanding programs that we have in our archives. Hopefully, this is something that's coming up in the middle of this month. Hopefully, Sam Rohr is going to be on from 12 to 1, and hopefully we can duplicate that and replay it from 7 to 8. And so we're making changes here, and I think we're getting better, actually. And just wanted our listeners to know all that, Michael.
All right. Well, thank you very much. So go ahead and be listening for those changes. Phil Valentine's program being extended and looking for someone. Fortunately, Roger Hedgecock a historic talk radio personality retiring. But now we have in studio with us right now, we have Michelle Faustin with Accelerating Your Business. Michelle, how you doing?
Great. How are you?
Good. Well, why don't you go ahead and take it away, Michelle?
Okay. Well, thank you. Good morning, everyone. This is the weekly call-in radio show, Accelerating Your Business, place every Thursday morning from 7:34 to 8 a.m. on 1180 WFYL. For those of you who are listening for the first time, we welcome you. This show is designed to help business owners or aspiring business owners or even managers or executives have a platform to call in and ask whatever business question that they like. Callers can call in at area code 610-539-8255, which stands for 610-539-TALK, or 877-667-1180. You can also email me at askmichelle, askmichelle, at 1180wfyl.com. I am president and CEO of MJF Strategy. That's a growth strategy and business expansion consulting firm that I've been doing this for a long time, 10 years with the firm and many years before after that with various other large organizations. And so I've been fortunate enough to work with companies ranging from startup, zero revenue, all the way to Fortune 100. And I've created this platform along with WFYL to try to provide an opportunity for those who may not always feel comfortable asking the questions they need to ask or the burning questions they have in them in terms of people in their immediate circle. Even for those who do, maybe just want an additional confirmation or another soundboard to be able to do so. So for those of you who are returning, you know that the way that this works is typically every week we go through a segment. I start talking about a topic, but then as callers call in, I gladly interrupt and take their call and answer their business question. So the topic that we've been going over the last few shows have been knowing your numbers and the importance of understanding and knowing your numbers as a business owner. Even as an executive, because that's important as well. But I guess a lot of times we gear it towards those, again, who are business owners or aspiring to be so. Knowing your numbers, again, is very critical because you have to know not only for yourself, but you have to know it for your employees. And you also have to know it for any particular investors or lenders that you may seek now or in the future. The numbers that we talked about in the past, I'll just do a brief recap and then I'll continue on. As far as revenue, something that's very simple. Again, of course, we will say, of course, revenue. Revenue is a sales. We need to generate sales in order to run a business. And this is true. But revenue has to be broken down into price times quantity. And when we first take price, which we did a couple of weeks ago, price is something that can be very tricky, right? You have to determine what your strategy is going to be in terms of price. So do you want to be, let's say, the middle of the road provider where you're on par with everyone else, you know, and you're not too high above, not too far below, and feel that you can still be profitable in that regard? Do you want to be the high cost provider, the high value provider? We talked about being like the price leader. So those are like on a larger scale, the Apples of the world, the Lexus, you know, a lot of luxury brands. But even if you're a smaller shop, you can still be a high price leader. It's just that you would have to come up with a way to be able to communicate the value to customers if you're deciding that you want to charge higher than what they would typically pay for any product or service. So that may be in the form of just better quality items if it's actually something tangible and in form of good or product, but it can also be additional services. If you're providing a service, you know, additional services, more value added, more targeted, more niche, if it's something that maybe other people don't currently provide. It can also be if, let's say, you're providing service that requires a high level of experience or acumen or education to those who are providing it, whether that's yourself or others, then that's something that you can command a higher price for as well, since those things are valuable. So whatever you decide, but the point is making sure that if that's your strategy, you have something that, one, you're able to provide, and it is, two, value added to those who you're serving, and three, they believe that the value or additional value that you're adding will command that price and you'll be able to keep it up consistently. For the bigger companies that I mentioned earlier, you know, Apple just doesn't come out with one great product and then that's it, right? They're constantly innovating, constantly, you know, making sure that they not only keep up to date and continuously improve the products and services they do offer, but they're always coming out with, again, new products. And some people may get a little frustrated because they feel like, I just bought something from there and now they're coming out with something else. But the point is people still will continue to buy it because, you know, not only that it's just Apple and they've been able to build that brand name, but, you know, it's the quality of the products that they provide and the fact that they are are an innovative leader and tend to think of things sometimes before we even do in terms of what might be beneficial. So some of those principles, again, even though that's a very, very large corporation, some of those principles you can trickle down to yourself. We also talked about if you want to be the opposite, which is a low-cost provider. If you are a low-cost provider, then you are deciding that you want to actually position yourself a different way, right? You want to be the person or the entity where people come to and purchase because you actually are providing the services or products that you have at a lower cost. So if that is something in terms of products, you think in terms of Walmart or Dollar Store or some of those other low-cost, you know, Five Below, things of that nature that have been very successful because their niche is making sure that they can provide those products to consumers at a very low price, and there is a market segment for that. In terms of services, again, you may be able to offer the same services as some of your competitors or some of others that are in the area, and you can still offer a lower price, which will be your value proposition to others, pretty much saying, I can offer the same services at a lower price, and you know that can be the position that will get you the customers or get you in the door, so to speak, in terms of the services end. So if you decide to go that route, that is something that you need to think about. But again, whether you decide to be high price, low price, or middle of the road price, the important thing, again, we talked about is making sure that you hit your break-even point. And break-even is the amount that you would need to charge to cover your costs and in essence not incur any losses but have your company be at zero. So if you get to that break-even point, then you know that anything above that is something that should help you to generate profit, which is, of course, the main reason why you're in business, not just for sales, but to make sure your bottom line is important. On the other end, we talked about quantity, right? So quantity is just number of units. And again, that's number of products, if it's tangible products or the amount of services, whether you take that breakdown down into hours and things of that nature. So in the quantity end, we talked about the importance of understanding how much quantity, again, you need to be able to sell in order to hit that, again, that crucial break-even point, and then what you need to be able to sell above that. Two, we talked about your ability to actually, one, generate the quantity or be able to sell it. So sometimes businesses have issues when they feel like, okay, this is our demand, and they don't have enough capital, enough money to actually produce what the demand can actually offer. That's not a good thing. So you want to be able to make sure that your quantity is actually in line with what you need in terms of being able to satisfy demand. And then on the other end, for quantity, you also need to make sure that if you're on the other side where you have the capital and you have the product, that you can actually handle it in terms of your infrastructure and the people that you have at. So, you know, these are some of the couple of areas that we discussed previously. Again, I will be talking a little bit more and bridging you to today's topic, which is customer acquisition. For those calling in, call in at 610-539-8255-TALK or 877-667-1180. And this is Accelerating Your Business. Hi, good morning, everyone. And thank you again for tuning in to 1180 WFYL. This is Accelerating Your Business, a weekly call-in radio show that is designed for business owners and aspiring business owners. Those who are in those categories can call us in and ask whatever business question they like. Every week we go through a particular topic, and I was earlier talking about knowing your numbers and doing a recap of some of the topics we had discussed previously to bring those of you who may not have been able to listen in the previous weeks up to date. You can still give us a call in at 610-539-8255, which stands for 610-539-TALK, or 877-667-1180. You can also email me at askmichelle, askmichelle, at 1180wfyl.com. And again, I'm Michelle Fawson, President and CEO of MJF Strategy and host of Accelerating Your Business. So what we were talking about before the break is, again, the knowing your number should be for your business. So again, that's just in plain terms what it costs to acquire a new customer. And so one of the things we discussed last week briefly was about time. And you have to, in terms of putting together your numbers and together your understanding of what it takes, you have to look at the cost of time. That's your direct cost in terms of how much time it takes you to actually acquire a customer, as well as the opportunity cost, which is the cost that you are now incurring because you're not pursuing something else. Almost in essence that you have another opportunity that you could be pursuing, but you're not pursuing that because you're pursuing, let's say, this particular customer or these particular customer segments and looking at the, you know, the net value of each. We also now are taking a look at some of the other costs associated with acquiring a new customer, and that is in terms of marketing. So most people market. I think it's very, very rare that a company does not do any marketing, but it's very important when you are calculating what this number is to be able to understand what forms of marketing you currently do or forms of marketing you currently need, and then being able to segment it. So marketing can be segmented in a few ways. We'll just discuss a couple, but there are many, a myriad of ways. You know, the first one is online, which of course, you know, in the last couple decades have exploded in terms of, you know, business owners, small and large, being able to reach customers and reach consumers. So social media, in terms of Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, you know, some definitely key areas that you can utilize to be able, and LinkedIn, another one, that you can actually utilize to be able to promote your services, since this is where a large segment of the population, especially millennials, but even those who are older, tend to go to just find information. Now, some of that in terms of when you're looking at calculating costs can be simply what you pay for, let's say, a particular page, what you pay if it's an employee that's actually updating that information, or if it's something that you're doing in terms of your cost of time. But then also you want to take a look at, you know, some of the other things that you can do that are more, a little bit more indirect, and take the cost of that. So that can be creating blogs, that can be cross promoting. You know, there are many other things that you can do online. There's many businesses where the majority of their revenue nowadays actually come from online offerings, and even just the website and how much it costs for that. Websites are very good because they also give you very detailed analytics, so you can see how customers have come to your page, and then you can see from those customers that have come to your page who actually are the ones who have purchased your item. So being able to do that is something that you can easily track, at least in terms of metrics. Calculating that in terms of cost might be a little bit tricky because there might be different tiers of numbers being used, meaning the cost of the website and updating that, the cost of, again, posting to social media, the time associated with it, and how you value that. But being able to put those numbers in addition to the time numbers we discussed before, is something that can help you arrive to that cost. In addition, you want to take a look at the traditional costs associated, the other traditional, excuse me, marketing costs associated with acquiring a new customer. And that is just your basic, if you decide to advertise via television or radio or print, whether that's newspaper or magazine or newsletter in any way, being able to take the metrics and the information that you have from that is very, very important as well. You want to be able to break down, because you need to know, you know, where you're getting the most bang for your buck, so to speak. You want to be able to see from your customers if you are driving most of the customer base through a particular medium. So maybe let's say radio more so than print. And if that's the case, then you'd want to invest a little bit more into that. If it's television or, you know, whatever the nuance is, you want to look at the cost that you're putting in to actually pay for something. And then you want to also look, of course, to see, you know, how many customers you get from that, and then calculate what those costs are to be able to add to that customer acquisition cost. So these kind of costs, as well as several others, you know, that you have internal to your business, and those can vary depending on the type of business that you have and the industry that you're in, are critically important, because you need to understand that. You know, a lot of times customers or can come to you and want to do business with you, but they might just be too expensive for you to actually serve if it costs a lot to acquire them. Conversely, the ones that are lower cost and can give you higher value on ones that you may want to target a little bit more as well. And then as a business manager or a business owner, you need to understand these numbers as well, because you want to know which type of customer segments are going to be the most profitable, generate the most revenue for you, which costs you should actually focus more on in terms of managing. Again, what you want to invest a little bit more in and what you want to take out in. Then once you actually acquire the customers and you look at the length of time it takes, and again, doing those calculations to get to that number, you also then want to take a look now of, okay, of those customers that we acquire using the various mediums, again, direct in terms of time, going out there yourself, online or traditional, of those customers, you know, how long do those customers actually stay? Meaning, like, what is the actual, you know, there's a term called the lifetime value of a customer, or the average lifetime value of a customer. That's also something that is very important to understand and know, because you can go through everything that you go through to acquire a new customer, but if they only stay around for a very short period of time, and then you look to see, well, how much did you invest and, you know, into actually bringing them on versus how much revenue and profitability did they actually generate once we got them on? Well, then that's something that you know, is something that you have to pay attention to, because if they are not staying on long enough to become profitable, then it's actually not a good way to look at that customer base, unless it's something that you're positioning for a longer term play. Sometimes you want to invest in for a short period of time or a certain horizon, you're actually not getting the, let's say, quote unquote, monetary value that you believe that you should be getting. But when you look at the bigger picture, it sometimes may make sense to just kind of hang in there with a particular segment, because you know that it's something that's going to generate revenue for you going forward. However, you know, there are certain situations and circumstances where it may be a better case to actually just kind of shift gears. In addition, you actually want to take a look at, you know, what's going to happen in terms of other set, meaning customers that actually are there for a very long term. And if you decide and you look at your numbers and you look and you say, wow, you know, it didn't really cost that much to get X customers, and the customers are actually, you know, with us for a longer period of time, and they're continuously generating revenue. And most of the time, when you have a customer continuously over time, they become more and more profitable if they at least keep at the very minimum up of the purchases that they've made at the beginning. If they do more, that's even better. But usually it becomes more profitable because then you're not putting in any additional effort or time or resources into acquiring them, because you already have them. So you get the kind of benefit of having a longer lifetime horizon or lifetime value of the customers you have. So knowing that you have those in place is also, again, very critical and very important to be able to kind of put into, who should I be targeting? What kind of customers should I acquire? You know, the amount of time that you should actually take to actually invest in particular segments and particular forms of marketing and specific areas and traditional areas that you've had in the past. So again, all these metrics are to help you to be a much better business owner. And again, for those of you who are trying to raise money, it's something that will be very helpful for you, because these are the type of questions investors or lenders will ask. So we are actually out of time today. This actually went very, very quickly this morning. Again, you know, for those who wanted to call in, you can definitely call in next week, since you didn't get an opportunity today, at 610-539-8255-TALK or 877-667-1180. You can also email me, not just now, but during the week, before our next program, at askmichelle@1180wfyl.com. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I look forward to speaking with you next week.
It's a new day on 1180 WFYL. Call in at 610-539-TALK, 610-539-TALK, or abroad at 1-877-667-1180. That's 1-877-667-1180. Welcome to the program this morning, talking about the developments. You know, Arkansas and Indiana, it's amazing. 19 other states, they don't have a whole lot of relation, do they? I mean, one is in the deep south, the other's in the far north, or maybe not the far north. Maybe that's maybe the far north is more like Maine. You kind of freeze your tail off. I don't know how cold it is in Maine right now, but I had a friend who was in Maine. Sometimes they'd say it would be 20 below zero. Ooh. I'm glad it's springtime here. Go ahead, call in at 610-539-TALK, 610-539-TALK, or 1-877-667-1180. Abroad, that's 1-877-667-1180. Welcome to the program this morning. Now, we've got some cuts, and you want to hear it right from the horse's mouth. Some cuts of Governor Mike Pence and some cuts of Governor Asa Hutchinson, saying that they are basically going to work in some way to repeal. That's not exactly what they said, but they want to basically change the law that is already on the books right now. And I'll let you hear it straight from them. It's very interesting when you look at all that has transpired. See, no one, you're going to find out who really has a backbone in this whole issue. because people are backpedaling. People are backpedaling like they're in a backwards race. And it is just blowing everyone's expectations as far as Christian expectations from that standpoint. Because, well, here, I'll go ahead and play this for you. This is Governor Mike Pence. Okay, now that's just. No one has any problem with that. No one has any problem with Indiana being open for business or inviting people in. But there's underlying tones in that. That's not the cut. Let's go ahead and play this cut here. Now the problem is with the law that you're letting people, you're giving them that ability to do just that. And what you consider discrimination, you're giving people in the law the right to have their religious beliefs trump any kind of government infraction upon those. So if they want to refuse service for any reason to anyone, not homosexual, it does not exclusively mean homosexual at all. If you want to refuse service to anyone for any reason, that's really what the law was saying in and of itself, then your religious beliefs permit you to do that, and we're going to protect that. So for him to say that, it's short-sighted, and he's backpedaling. He's really backpedaling right now because of the backlash. No one, and this is scary as far as where is our nation headed? Where is it headed? No one, and we have this amorphous idea of moral standards. They constantly change. They constantly can be amended to fit whatever we deem is permissible. And if we live in that kind of society, then eventually we'll be so far down the road we don't know where we are at all. So we have that. Now, let's go to, there's some cuts from Governor Asa Hutchinson about what has been happening in his household, what has been happening in his household in regards to this very bill, or at least the one passed in Arkansas. And that's all well and good, but let's see what he says in this clip. And putting those both together, you hear what's going on. Everyone is heading for the hills. They're heading for the hills on this issue, and we're going to see some big changes in this country because of it. We're going to see some big changes from the Christian point of view, too. Supreme Court is expected to rule this summer on homosexual marriage. And when that happens, most likely they're going to vote it as law that homosexuals can be married in every state. When that happens, who knows what's going to happen at that point. Either way, it's not a good situation on how they rule. We have Al Locke in studio with us this morning, and Al, you had some points that we have another program with Sam Rohr and Gary Porter, and you had some points to bring up that they were discussing on another issue. Al, would you go ahead and share that with us this morning?
Well, we have Constitution Matters at starting at 7 tomorrow morning on Friday. Gary Porter is from Yorktown, Virginia, a nationally known constitutional scholar. He essentially was retired Air Force, an F-15 fighter pilot, among other jets. You know, if you know anything about the military, the F-15 is the primary, or was for years, still is to some degree, the primary air dominance fighter for the United States. So Gary's among the very elite of the elite. Just to get there, going through the Air Force Academy and whatever, he had to be an elite person. He's an elite thinker. Sam Rohr, a course, served like 9 terms in the Pennsylvania legislature. He's now head of the American Pastors Association, head of the Pennsylvania Pastors Association, a great mind, a focused mind. Both of them have a lot to say. I urge our listeners to listen to them tomorrow and, like I am, be informed by listening to them. Gary sends out a Constitution's Week in Review, and essentially Sam Rohr does about the same thing, except from a different standpoint, his jurisdiction being the American Pastors Association. Gary Porter says, our nation's breathtaking race towards suppressing anything, speech or otherwise, that might be offensive to politically favored groups, while allowing and even encouraging equally grievous offenses aimed at less favored groups, is the height of hypocrisy. This is from a constitutional scholar, a leader. You know, this is what's going on, what Michael's been talking about. They're attacking the governor of Indiana, the governor of Arkansas, for not applying the Constitution equally. And the majority is being suppressed by a 3% minority. And here's going on what Gary says. A perfect example is the N-word, which can be used freely, whether in friendly or derogatory exchanges by some races, but not by others. As a frat boys, he's talking about a University of Oklahoma fraternity that apparently used the N-word, and they got essentially censored and closed down, shut down over an incident that 30 years ago would have been met with a symbolic slap on the wrist at worst. So this is the way things are. We don't condone the fraternity at the University of Oklahoma, but on the other hand, to have one group be able to say something and another group not be able to say it is hypocrisy. It ought to be illegal. And essentially, these people are shouting us down. And that's hypocrisy. If you read the Bible, you'll find out that Jesus Christ got the most upset of the hypocrisy of the scribes and the Pharisees. And the scribes, by the way, are the lawyers. So things haven't changed. There used to be a ditty that Gary, again, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. That was then, this is now. Now the offended take up guns and knives to settle a perceived score, or conversely, the offended go off and hang themselves, believing their lives are no longer worth living. The toleration door swings both ways, folks. Eric Holder once called us cowards for not having a conversation about race. Perhaps the charge was misaimed. Perhaps instead we need a national conversation about words. Who shall lead it? He goes on about the First Amendment. The left is incensed over the abridgment of religious expression and lobbied hard for the passage of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act.
And we're going to have more about that when we get back from this break. Okay, Al, we'll go ahead and continue. It's a new day.